We're going to begin today with a little ritual that we're going to do together, and it's about the four directions. And I need four people that would be willing to light a candle. If you would raise your hand, come up and stand up. There's four candles up here. You can stand anywhere. 2, 3, 1 more. Great. You'll find a candle right there. And then the rest of you just come up and just join in someplace around the circle. So the candles that you're looking at represent the four directions. And this is actually north, where I'm standing right now. Where Linda's standing is south. And west is where John is. And then east. Right. Okay. I think we're ready. Oh, and then when Chuck is reading the direction, we're going to just turn to the direction. Like, if it's north, we'll all face north. Yes, and we'll all turn to face the south. Okay.
Great Spirit of Light, come to us out of the east, the red, with the power of the rising sun. Let there be light in our words. Let there be light on our path that we walk. Let us remember always that you give the gift of a new day. And never let us be burdened with sorrow by not starting over again. So if you'll light the candle of the east. Now let's turn to the north. Great Spirit of Love, come to us with the power of the north. The white. Make us courageous when the cold wind falls upon us. Give us strength and endurance for everything that is harsh, everything that hurts, everything that makes us squint. Let us move through life ready to take what comes from the north. So if you'll light the candle of the north. And now the west. Great life-giving spirit, we face the west, or the black, the direction of sundown. Let us remember every day that the moment will come when our sun will go down. Never let us forget that we must fade into you. Give us a beautiful color, give us a great sky for setting, so then when it is our time to meet you, we can come with glory. If you light the candle of the west. And then the south. Great Spirit of Creation, send us the warm and soothing winds from the south, or the yellow. Comfort us and caress us when we are tired and cold. Unfold us like the gentle breezes that unfold the leaves of the trees. As you give to all the earth your warm, moving wind, give to us so that we may grow close to you in warmth. Humans did not create the web of life. We are but a strand in it. Whatever humans do to the web, we do to ourselves. So if you light the candle to the south. Amen.
you, Wendell, for playing.
I thought we might take a little bit of touching base with one another from our previous 2 days, partly as a way of welcoming people who haven't been here on one or the other of those days, but also to see what questions, protests, thoughts, urgings have come between the time we left each other yesterday and today.
With one of the people that was here yesterday, and I'm sure she's going to be coming, but she said how meaningful it was to act out the mother bear. And it really helped her broaden that experience of being connected to the universe. And she was actually surprised, I think. So it was neat that she...
I know there are a couple who weren't here. You want to say what we did with the mother bear,
Linda? We acted out a mother bear in hibernation. And the interesting thing is Kathleen helped us remember that they're so much bigger than the baby bear, because during hibernation they give birth. So there was 20 of us smooshed together, and we had to get closer and closer and closer to be the mother bear, and then we had one baby bear coming in that we included, kind of had a wiggle in, but included in after birth into the mother bear.
And so part of what we've been doing in the last 2 days, just to remind us and welcome others, is to have two worlds that we bounce off of for our orientation. The first is the Earth itself, and so we've been looking at the history of the Earth itself and asking ourselves to see the Earth's history, what the Earth is, as a primary orientation to who we are. And secondly, to take this valley and think about what this valley is, and notice what is happening in this valley at this moment. And so that's how we got to the mother bear, because we remembered that the mother bear in February bears a little baby bear. And then in order to claim this valley as bigger than us, this valley as older than us, more profound than us, we acted this valley's February event, one of its February events, out with the mother bear and the baby bear. Other things that have been nagging you since yesterday? Yes, Christy?
We talked about the original cell that kind of came very randomly with just the right set of circumstances, and most of the cells died, but somehow we're descendants of that same cell. But I was kind of confused after that.
Yeah, so we took the book that has been helping us along the way, Brian Swim and Thomas Berry, The Universe Story, and that story has among it the story of how the first cell on Earth came into being. Christy, say a little bit more about what you noticed about that story.
I challenged by it because I was challenged in not almost worshiping that original little pioneer cell. And so I didn't know quite how to react. And find the right thing from the story.
And
the right thing for me, the meaningful thing for me.
Yeah.
It was challenging me to go in a direction I wasn't comfortable going.
Return to that in just a moment is a question, very important. What do you remember about the story?
The lightning.
The lightning.
Really, really big lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Frankenstein lightning, like Jim said. But, and the sea, just the right temperature, just the right chemicals, and just the right situation for this to happen.
And can anybody remember how long the lightning went on?
Millions
and millions of years, just almost constant lightning into the ocean of the Earth. And somewhere in that, that was a primary, as I understood the story, that was a primary reason that the cell came into being was that it there were all kinds of things happening in on a chemical level, on a energy level, on a potency level, and so that was the time when this first cell came into being. And Christy, you remembered that we were somehow encouraged to think that we and that cell were connected, right? Mm-hmm. Does anyone have what you were thinking about as to whether you were connected to that cell and how?
Well, there's a little conflict with the Bible story.
And
we were talking millions and billions of years, and it's a seven-day thing in the Bible. And not that I believe that for a moment, but it's an eye-opener to understand that this didn't happen in the blink of an eye. And oh, by the way, it was very much God-driven.
Thank you. Yeah. Other things about how you might belong to that first cell yourself, be connected to it?
We're made up of them.
Made up of cells, yeah, right. In other words, the cell as a structure, right? In this story of the way these two scientists put it together, in this story, there was a time before there were cells. And whether there are cells on other and different kinds of cells on other in other places in the universe, we didn't go into, but yeah, there was a cell.
And all things are connected.
All things are connected, therefore the cell is connected to you. And because we have cells in ourselves. How many cells do we have in ourselves? lots. Do you know how many, Linda? Good.
No.
I don't either. Lots of them. Yes. Probably, yeah, millions or something like that. Other ways that if you think of the first cell on Earth, why you might be connected to it.
I was kind of concerned about that. It sounds so fragile, and I just was a little worried about it.
And would that be a way in which you are connected to it?
That was what I thought of when you asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, isn't that amazing how fragile we sometimes are?
Oh yeah.
I think in the story,
I might be wrong, but I remember hearing, at least I added it if it wasn't there, that the cell was alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they said.
They said that cell was alone. And that's where I connected. I went, oh, it's alone.
Yeah.
Which told me something about myself. Of course, not about self, but myself.
And you may remember that the way the telling of the story was that probably there were a number of cells that came into being around that time. And probably linearly, it was not just one cell, everything depending on one cell, but it might have been.
I thought it said there was lots of cells and lots of them didn't survive.
Yeah, I think it said that as well. But yeah, right. Oh, and some of them did, but lots of them did not. Yeah.
But they might not have known each other, so they were alone.
Right, yeah.
So I was thinking a little bit about if you were trying to think of yourself as, you know, at what point in your life were you closest to thing to that cell.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
You start going back to thinking, okay, well now there's the egg and there's the sperm, and whether there's lightning involved or not. It's kind of like, you know, there was that point at which we really were.
Yeah, that's wonderful to notice that there might that two or five cells might have actually been something we could think of as having relationship to it. Nice. Yes.
I understood from what I read that we are all related and we're all interrelated, and so if we go out of relationship, we cannot survive. And that struck me.
And to a certain extent, one would say that the without a first cell, none of us would be,
right?
So that is the connection. That's the really big connection. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's return to Tim and Christy's questions about this a bit. What would be the big deal, if I understood you, Christy, of why should we pay attention to the first cell? Is that right? I want to make sure that.
I like that. What Tim said about how about energy, and it was millions of years, but it was a blink of eye, so some greater power was in motion before that first cell.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of concentrating on the cell instead of.
Oh, a greater power before it.
Which I call God, but this greater energy force that somehow everything was just right, and then that cell came into being, and here we are into being. And actually, that. It does parallel the biblical story in a lot of ways, as far as some things come first, and out of those things come other things.
And so what's so important about what you just said that I'd like to elaborate on in terms of what we can get to and can't get to in these 3 days at lunch, or breakfast, I can't remember which, someone asked, so was in 25 years, will people be thinking the same thing about how the earth began as Thomas Berry and Brian Swim did? And it seemed obvious that an answer is obviously not. In other words, this is a relative story. Almost sure to be improved upon, and followed in some ways. So it's really important, I think, to know that this, in some ways, is just a story, even while it was written by two people who had studied the scientific dimensions of it for most of their life and put it together. The main thing I want to say, if you find yourself wanting to follow the universe story and Barry and Swim, they are very close to what where you were thinking, Christy, in that for two reasons. One is, of course, the first thing on Earth in any stories is hardly ever the first thing, right? In other words, so even in their story, the first story is something like the what they call the flaming fourth or the Big Bang. But they are actually quite close to asking, so what is the power in it all as this happens? And I think they would, I know that Thomas Berry would be comfortable with calling that God and Brian Swim wouldn't. But to ask that question about what, is there something that brings it all together or gives it an origin, is really very much their question and their direction. So they actually, they have this. This is saying an entire really thick book, not thick this way, but thick in its thoughts, in about 2 minutes. But what they're saying about the history of the Earth is that it has an overabundance of energy always going forward. That is, that what they notice about the Earth, say in contrast to Saturn or Neptune or something like that, is it has a whole bunch of energies that keep going on almost too much. What they're saying is there's so many different kinds of energy on the Earth, and they're going in all different directions, producing many, many things that one didn't think could exist. And so all of their stories, so for instance, one story that we told day before yesterday was alive energy got on land. And what they're saying is that there are all kinds of chemical things going on, all kinds of physical things going on, all kinds of things one doesn't understand in any terms that keep pushing things, giving more and more energy on Earth. So they don't use the word God for that. Thomas Berry says he would. Brian Swim is a Native American and wants a different kind of vocabulary. What I would like to say is these people who've been working on the scientific dimension of it have basically decided that they're one has to acknowledge that the history of the Earth, and they would say the history of the universe, but especially the history of the Earth, is energized in ways that one can't imagine. So basically every chapter is about, wow, how did that happen? Which gets us to Tim's question, right? Which is, this doesn't really sound like the Bible. Good point, right? What we were saying there are five stories of the creation in the Bible. There are two in the first two chapters of Genesis, one in Proverbs, one in the Wisdom of Solomon, and one in the Gospel of John. So those are, they're all somewhat different and somewhat dependent on one another. But none of those are like the story of the universe that we heard. There's some similarities and some differences. So I think I would like to just say provisionally that us being bothered by this story of the universe seems in place. Seems like it's probably a good idea for us to be bothered a little bit about it. And us seeing and hoping for similarities between the Bible stories of creation and this are also productive. So that's where I think this, for me, a very exciting story that is based within scientific exploration comes out. So I would want to just say thank you for those questions. And it seems like us working on the larger question of the energies that save us and create us are served by all of the above. So that was 2 minutes of what should what is a long book. These are all really helpful. Other things that are cooking in your thinking. I've had two meals about this in the meantime, and we were all quite excited. So I want to go back a little bit more to something we said about the first cell in a moment, but I gave you all an assignment for yesterday, and that was, if you'd like, could you make a little story or picture or thought or image that pictures how you want to reclaim your relationship to the earth? So I said you could do it as a group, you could do it your own self, or you didn't have to do it at all. So just for us, we three, figuring out what we're doing for the next, for the rest of the hour. Can you tell me, raise your hands if you did some of that. That's a little bit more than half. Thank you. That'll quiet me sooner. that's great. But let's stay with the story of the first cell. I want to, we touched on this a little bit right before, but I want us to, when we think of that story, and we're not quite sure it's exactly accurate, but we told it. When we think of that story, would there be reasons for us to tell that story again to ourselves and others? Would you like to remember that cell? Mm-hmm. And why?
It's our relative.
It's our relative, yeah. So that's the term, for those of you who haven't been here for the last 2 days, we've been talking about all of the energy and life of that in the earth, considering it as our relatives.
So I would say yes, I would like to retell that story. At one level, I think it gives us a deeper scientific insight into the biblical story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel is conflicted about the two. And for me, it helped get me out of the thought process that my relatives are not in a straight line lineage.
Mm.
So you've got one cell that may have been first, but given the environment and the hundreds of millions of years of lightning going off, how many other cells were ultimately created before it turned into some secondary organism or multi-cell organism and started down the path of what ultimately became human?
Mm-hmm.
You know, today. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of broadened my perspective about it.
Thank you. And you, John, remember, remind me of something else that was said in the story, and that is that half of everything that is alive today are cells, are one cell big entities. And many of them are actually inside us, but probably, as we said before, 10,000 in this room. Yeah, thank you. I would like to, anyone else want to say something about that? Because John has got me going in a way that I think might be helpful. Other reasons that you would like to tell that story again?
I think I feel kind of in awe of the fact that the cell even happened. And it makes me feel as though I want to, if I were to retell a story, I want to protect that occurrence and kind of that sense that that's a vulnerable creation that we might need to look out for.
I can tell you that Swim and Barry do name it. Yeah. It's a Greek name, and that's why I didn't tell you. Yes, Linda.
Well, I think one of the reasons that I would want to tell that story is I think it also helps the human species to understand that we are one small part of a very big story. Because I think that's essential right now, that we would understand how codependent we are and how we're related. So much more than just our mothers and fathers.
Yeah. Thanks very much. And let me repeat what we've said over the last 2 days about that thought. And it's that what, given the state of our world now and the roles of humans in destroying so many things, for us to have stories to tell that would make us a part of those stories, but not at the center of those stories, is a spiritual quest that I've launched here. Yes?
Didn't you touch on the fact that these little cells in the stew of the sea, 90% died, and then hundreds of millions of years later, 90% of all the beings of that time died, and this has been happening throughout history, and I think it's hopeful for the Earth, maybe not for human beings. If the worst comes to worst, 90% of them, I'd probably be one of them, are wiped out. Something's going to keep surviving, though. There's something greater that this energy, their survival, is going to keep going. It just is bigger than us.
Yes, and I did say some of that, and the short version of that I didn't get to yesterday is that there are five major dyings.
Five?
Five in the history of the Earth. And some of them were 90%, some of them were 35%. Many people think that we're now in the sixth with all the species. Being destroyed. So many of them. John?
I was thinking that some people might be able to connect more fully with a story like the lightning hitting the earth explanation sometime, they might be more willing to connect with the story and maybe actually transform their relationship to the earth, as opposed to saying, reading the Bible story and saying, well, I can't connect with this, therefore I don't want to connect with the rest of it, and I really don't want to engage with the relationship with the earth because I don't buy this. I think people might be able to be more receptive to a different type of story.
And that story.
I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just saying that might be an option.
You mean it might be that some people are turning away from the Bible?
Okay, so there's millions and millions of lightning, and it causes a change, an adaption, an evolution of some kind. We'll say the climate of the earth is changing, then maybe that's somewhat analogous to the lightning. Because if the lightning is changing things, it takes a long, long time for that change to happen. And if the climate's changing, that's another catalyst for change, for adaption, for evolution, for modification. And people might be able to relate to that, or maybe accept it, and maybe perhaps deal with it in a constructive way. Then as opposed to just ignoring it.
And John, if I may commend everyone in the room to just step aside with you at the end, because what happened at the end of yesterday was John had, I think, four or five amazing lightning stories, which made us so aware that lightning isn't just lightning. In all of the power that it actually, he was telling us about people that get struck by lightning and amazing things that happen to them. So that does bring me to the other thing that I want to ask about this story. Are there specific things? Now Dana has already brought this. Dana likes the fragileness of the story, right? That you that can, just as a story, that means something to you. And John likes the lightning. And I, frankly, I hadn't even noticed this until I read it to you all, when it said how many millions of years the lightning was striking all the time the oceans. That in and of itself made me aware of what a great story. So I want to then ask this question of us all. So what if these two scientists didn't get it all right? I mean, they're relying on a whole bunch of others, and they're trying to write a good story. They're trying not to be scientists. They're trying to be storytellers with the scientific material. What if the story of the first cell was wrong, what they've written? Or part of it was wrong, has inaccuracy? Would this story be valuable for you anyway? So John has said one of the main things that this helps is to get reconnected between religion and science. But it seems to me like there's a possibility that this story might be worthy of telling, even if it was slightly off, or a good deal off. Anything else you remember about the story that that just in what happened in the story, it was interesting to you, or wanted you, made you want to keep the story?
Well, the elements I'm interested in are autopoiesis, and that we share that in common with cells, and that every entity on the earth does.
That's wonderful. Could you say it? Tell us a little bit more.
A little bit more. I just have their words: self-organizing dynamics, and it's invisible to the eye,
and it points to the interiority of everything. Mm-hmm. And once again, a teaching a woman said to me was that I think she was interior sailor. She said, we always look at everything with the understanding that there's far more inside than outside. Mm-hmm. And that sense of potency, I guess we haven't really talked much about potency.
Yeah,
we talked about
right.
energy as visible and manifest,
yeah,
but
right.
not potency.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So those things catch me. And then the sentience of elements even.
Mm-hmm. Let, if I can say over again just what you said, which, so the this story has potency as one reason to
And they talk
to
about
tell
the potency
it.
Of exist, I mean...
The potency of cells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just to, thanks for working on that. That just to remind you that my project... In these 3 days and in June, when we're going to do this again here, my project is to see whether there are a bunch of Earth stories that can help us know better who we are, and that it would change how we think of ourselves, because we would give a central dimension of our identity, not to the greatness of humans, but the greatness of the earth. Okay, so I have lots more to think about with you today, and maybe another story to tell. But since most of you have been working on a story overnight, we should cede the territory to you. What we'd like to do and is we have, those of you who were here, it was Friday night that we did these pinch pots, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the pinch pots are back, and they're dry, and they got candles in them.
Not fired yet, but they're
dry. Not fired, but they're dry. So if you have if you want to share, we assume that like Barry and Swim, what we have to say in the next time is partial, is not complete. But it'd be really fun to hear your image or story of how you, which would help you reclaim your relationship to the earth. So we'll just ask people to share as much or as little as you want. And when you do that, we'll ask you to come and bring your pot. I think I can remember which mine is.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Okay, then it doesn't matter.
If you want to bring your own, that's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you thought just get anyone.
Well, yeah.
That's even better.
Okay.
Thank you. So, yeah, grab a pinch pot, come up here and tell us your image for that will help you reclaim your relationship with the earth. If you simply want to reclaim your relationship to the earth, but didn't think about it last night or didn't come up with anything, grab one of those and come up and light it anyway. So I'm going to sort of hang around up here and mostly get out of the way as I ask people one at a time to come and tell their story or show their picture or something in between. Would this be... We're going to get you a thing to speak with.
Well, I'm
I'm not an artist or a deep thinker, I don't think, but so what it means to reclaim my connection to the earth is something that I've been trying to practice all my life without knowing what I was doing, but now I am trying to really understand it more and trying to practice it more often than I can't have time for, because I live in a city and I work and I don't have time to get out into nature as much. But I really, really get a sense of renewal and spiritual awakening, and I don't know the words to describe it really when I'm out in nature. Mm-hmm. And so what I drew was a mountain, a waterfall, huckleberry bushes, mushrooms, trees, although you can't tell what all those things are because I'm not an artist. And then I wrote the words sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste, because to me, unless you can see it, hear it, smell it, touch it, and taste it, it just doesn't have the same meaning. I mean, you've got to get down into it and around, be surrounded by it and be enveloped in it. So I think that's all I'll say. I think that's...
Thank you. Thank you.
I even dedicate it.
Oh, thank you.
So what do I do with this? Light it.
Light it.
So I thought about how do I connect as close or as I could back to that single cell? How do I get to a small organism? And I have a history of liking to do some cooking. And the thought occurred to me that if I find some wheat and grind it up and add some water and make a sourdough starter, yeast being that smallest of organisms that I could think of, then I can turn that into the bread I so dearly love to eat as a way for me just to connect back to a very small organism. So.
So I thought of a ritual that I could do every day, and it's more of a mindfulness thing, and I wanted to connect to all of the elements. So I thought this could be just a quick 5 to 10 minute ritual that I would do every day. But I would connect with fire by lighting a candle or starting a wood stove, which I've been doing up here. Hopefully that'll do it. And then because we are so much water, I thought it would be wonderful to slowly and mindfully drink a full glass of water. And then for air, I thought of just taking in slowly and mindfully 10 good breaths. And then for the earth or plants, I was thinking I could, you know, chop wood. Well, have wood for the fire if I was doing a wood stove, but also maybe stand outside with our dachshund, who loves to take a little time to explore where he wants to do, or she wants to do her business, and look for a plant or a leaf or something to bring in and put on the threshold for the day. So that was my ritual.
Ooh.
Yes.
whoever this is. I didn't hear, wasn't here that day, so I'm enjoying picking this up. So, living in Seattle, we have already started to have a bit of spring. The earth has started to put forth those springy weeds that we all dislike, and already our small daffodils are starting to bloom. But what connected me to the earth is, again, going back to their senses, the beautiful smell of the earth awakening. And so my connection to the earth really does go back to my interest in gardening and my biology background and getting my hands in the dirt and the unbelievable satisfaction that that brings. And so, again, the wonderful aspect of just soil ecology, familiar to most of you, and that inorganic match meets organic, birth meets death, cooperation occurs among the organisms in order to bring fruit to bear, flowers for beauty. So that was my connection. Thank you. Thank you.
So, I had an aha moment about 10 years ago when I went to visit my son in Canada, and he's the one who married the First Nationer up there, and I was marveled when your kids teach you something. So, we were out fishing in a boat, he had no business. It was like a dinghy size right out in the ocean between the island and their home. And we're out there fishing, and he pulls in a really beautiful snapper and clubs it, and he gives a little prayer. He says, "Thank you for giving your life so that I might feed and nourish." There's a real, real connection.
Well,
so I was thinking about the million years of lightning and the first cell. And
of course, I was thinking about what a million years of lightning would sound like. and so I was thinking about, well, what does that sound like? And I was like, oh, wait, but the first cell doesn't have any ears, so they can't hear it. And so I was thinking about that, and then I make the jump to what it would be like for the first species of animal that could actually hear. And I was thinking about that and the connection of that and the lineage of that all the way to all the nerdy sound things that I like. And so, and then kind of trying to turn that into a ritual was, I could see myself doing something like Linda was doing, but then also adding another section to that, which was just trying to find the sound of a species every day that you haven't heard before, and listening to something that's surprisingly easy to do. You just Google something and YouTube or whatever, and just find a bird or a, but not just animal species, plant species and things can make some interesting sounds too. So yeah, I was thinking about doing that because I sort of do that, but not in an intentional way every day. So anyway.
Thank you.
So when this was suggested yesterday, I immediately went to Moss, walking in a park near my home. And I began to just meditate on me and moss. So it kind of goes like this. Moss, emerald green, velvet, soft like carpet, like fur or hair. What would it feel like if moss grew on me? Spongy, soaking up rain and dew, shining in the sun, needing the shade, growing on rocks, eating rocks, growing on trees, eating trees, growing on me, eating me.
Now, I did not make a pot, so I have to say thank you to the person who made that pot. Much appreciated. When I was thinking about this, this is what came to mind. I was thinking, what if instead of one cell, there was two? And during a huge flash of bolts that lit up the sea and lit up the about 20 feet of the water under the surface of the sea, that one cell was looking for the another cell somehow and hoping to find that other cell. In that brief flash of intense light, the cells saw each other through water and knew they were not alone. Because I thought that those cells might have the same thoughts that we have. Where did I come from? What am I doing here? And where am I going? As far as rituals go, there's something I do every year where my mother lives. It's a development, but the developers have left one lot untouched, and it's about a half acre. And the reason they did that is because it slopes down to an old stream, and right in the middle of that lot, there's a cedar tree that's about 180 feet tall, and it's probably 12 foot thick at the base, and it's probably the last remaining old growth cedar tree in all of Mason County, Washington. And so every year in the summer, I go, and I go for a big walk around the neighborhood, and I stop at that lot, and I walk out in the middle of it, and I put my hand on that tree, and I look up, 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 up into that tree, and I say, thank you, God, for this tree. And that is my ritual that helps me stay connected to the earth. Oh.
Am I okay without the microphone? I had the privilege of doing sea kayak whale watching tours for 20 years. And the transformation for me was that water became something very, very precious because you had to haul all of it, which I know hikers know especially well if there are no water sources. And the orcas gave me a living. And so now they're starving, and I'm getting ahead of myself. So this is a poem I wrote called Clothesline. Strung between 80-year-old Gravenstein and the Doug Fir Christmas tree 20 years past, my clothing, colors shaded by apple tree leaves, Lights and whites reach the fir through sun that whitens and brightens their stains. Stormy February nights, they stiffen into cardboard cutouts, transpiring still, then relax into weak winter glow through bony branches that limn a low transit of the sun. In weeks of rain, they're strung across my unheated shop, the fine line dance between dryness and mildew. Oops, into the dryer they go. It started with illness, more time than money. Now, shellangin, a life way. Dryer's a fifth of energy use, they say. Fifth here, fifth there, fifth everywhere. Before, I lived by orcas starving now. I vision a direct energy line to Snake and Columbia River dams, just enough surge and overspill to reduce dissolved oxygen, just enough for salmon fingerlings to survive and plummet hundreds of feet. Then wash to the ocean where lumberships ply to circuit the North Pacific gyre, swim nutrients, glacier scraped, then melted marine, back to forest, spruce and cedar tree, and back by my clothesline. And the ritual that I've been working toward doing and haven't done yet is to call the director of the Army Corps of Engineers every day and tell him to take down the four Lower Snake River dams, because I feel like my life needs to, my time now is reciprocity for the orcas. And thanks for the focus and support and community and holiness to support that when I go home.
I don't think I realized it was a ritual when I started doing it, but it definitely is. Last winter, I think it was last winter, I started wrapping the rocks that I found at Holden. I was reading a book called Timefulness, and it talked about that the rocks tell the longest story on the planet. And if we were on rock time, there we might be doing things differently, or if we listened to them more clearly. And I just thought, well, we spend a lot of time digging them and moving them and crushing them and a lot of other things, but we don't spend a lot of time trying to make them beautiful. So I began to wrap the rocks, and so I will leave them here on the, I think I'll put them over by the mountain. Does anybody else want to light a candle?
Talk about running out of time. Out of the ugliest pinch pot. And that was partly because I rolled it and pounded it and rolled it, and finally the moisture kind of went away. So I was not able to get it to form nicely like these other pots. But it reminded me of gentleman that Peg and Chuck had met on their travels that lived in the bayou, and he came and talked upon the ways that they were trying to keep living where they had lived, and their grandfathers lived, and their great-grandfathers had lived, and the French had lived. But the sea was still coming, and the shoals out there that helped keep the waves from coming were no longer there. And he was very upbeat, and they were doing a lot of things to try and keep this off. He was sort of in a red state where a lot of people weren't listening to him. But I asked him, How long can you live there? He says, well, I can't believe more than 20 years. So the sea's going to rise and get it, and at some point, we're going to have to go. In the meantime, we'll do everything we can. So it's kind of like my water running out of my body. Mm. Mm.
Well, for 35 years, I've been doing a ritual, but I had no idea why I did it until maybe this last day or two. Mm. And that is going to northern Minnesota or the southern Canada to go canoeing in the lakes. And every morning that I would wake up, I'd get out of the tent, I would go down to the side of the lake, I would put my hands on the surface of the lake, and feel like I was connected to the whole lake for that moment. Mm. That's how it started every morning. Mm. But I didn't know why.
Mm. I've been trying to think again of this valley every day. And just because of the character of what happened over the last 2 days here, I realized that so much of the time that my last 2 days, as Susan and I have been walking into the forest, what we've been looking at most is the result of the fire. Mm. And so I've been staying with that. I know that many of you probably have a deeper relationship with that fire than I, but it's had a place for me. But after our storytelling of this weekend, I was reminded that that fire started from the sky. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was lightning. Mm-hmm. And I remember how powerful it was in the middle of the fire as we were following it, and as you two wrote to us that you knew that that fire that was burning so powerfully was a good thing. Right in the middle of us fearing for your lives and for our memories here and the like, there we were in the middle of an unbelievably powerful lightning strike into our lives and into the bigger place that holds us, knowing, thanks to you and some of us knew before, knowing that the fires actually make the forest better. So, my ritual this weekend was looking at that process as it's starting. For a better forest because of lightning that strikes. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that Kate is going to sing us out.
So you remember when we made Pinch Pots, I first had you make a river stone, right? Thinking about that edge where rocks and water meet, that makes clay. And so I have a song that I learned from a friend about that that I think is big enough to hold what's been talked about in this space. And Wendell's going to help give some backing. So if you want to learn this part, you can jump to this. It begins like this. Listen, 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 listen. Listen. You got those notes? Listen. Listen.
Thank you all for being with us on these 3 days, and let's stay in touch as the work continues.
Yeah. Thank you.